Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello again from Washington. It's time to learn and improve your American English skills. Today we have information about an important meeting this weekend between two Asian powers. Then, power of another kind. The sun is shining in India, and it is providing a new source of clean energy. Politics, science, and ecology, all on today's edition of As It Is. Leaders from Taiwan and China will meet face-to-face for the first time since 1949 this Saturday. The two governments do not recognize each other. China claims that Taiwan is part of its territory. It views Taiwan as a breakaway state. The Chinese government wishes to reunify Taiwan with China. Most living in the Taiwanese democracy wish to remain separated from the Chinese. Reactions in China and Taiwan differ. The Chinese view the meeting as a historic milestone. Some Taiwanese worry the meeting could damage its democracy. Chinese President Xi Jinping and Taiwan President Ma Ying-jeou will meet in Singapore. Taiwan officials told VOA that no agreements will be signed. The two leaders plan to speak about a stronger peace between Taiwan and China. They will conduct separate press conferences. Then the two leaders will dine together in the evening. The meeting comes weeks before Taiwan holds general and presidential elections. Taiwanese politicians were concerned about the talks. They worry about unification discussions. Some formed a rally in the capital, Taipei. Protesters urged President Ma to call off the meeting. Others demanded President Ma to leave office. The history between Communist China and Democratic Taiwan is a tense history. The Nationalist Chinese, assisted by the Americans, lost the three-year civil war in 1949. By the end of 1949, the nationalists fled to Taiwan. The Communist Chinese have controlled mainland China since 1949. Relations between Taiwan and China have improved during Ma's time in office. He became president of Taiwan in 2008. He has signed 23 trade agreements with the Chinese. The United States had diplomatic relations with Taiwan for 30 years until 1979. Then the U.S. recognized China as the sole legal government, including Taiwan, says the U.S. Department of State. However, the United States continues a robust, unofficial relationship with Taiwan. You are listening to the Voice of America from Washington. Christopher Jones Cruz joins us now with some science news from the subcontinent. Chris?
Hundreds of villages in rural India are using clean energy powered by the sun. This month, 61 households in the village of Baripatha in eastern India were given 2 solar lamps. Villagers had been using kerosene lamps at night. Kerosene produces pollution and can lead to fires. The Indian government wants to increase the use of solar energy by 500% in the next 7 years. If it is to reach that goal, 100 gigawatts of power must come from solar by 2022. Now, just 4 gigawatts of power created in the country come from the sun. Officials say they want to slow the amount of greenhouse gas emissions. India is now the 3rd largest producer of this gas. The gas contributes to climate change. Arunabha Ghosh is the head of the Council on Energy, Environment and Water, a policy research group in New Delhi. He says, in terms of the share of electricity capacity that Germany achieved through renewables, that transition took about 22 years for Germany. In India's case, which is a much poorer economy, India is planning to have a similar shift towards renewable energy and non-fossil energy within 15 years. India's goal may be helped by the decreased cost of developing solar energy. The government says it wants investors to spend $100 billion over 7 years in solar power. It is reducing taxes for some solar-related investments. And it is permitting non-Indians to invest. This week, Germany said it would spend more than $2 billion on solar projects in India. Sun Edison, an American renewable energy company, says it wants to invest $15 billion. SoftBank, a Japanese company, has announced it will partner with companies in India and Taiwan to spend up to $20 billion on solar energy projects. Trina Solar, a Chinese company, plans to spend $500 million to make solar panels. Some people in India are worried that there is not enough land for some of these projects. Many of the projects need large plots of land. Inderpreet Wadha created a company called Azure Power. It was one of the earliest investors in solar projects. He said most of them are being built in dry areas of the country, on land that cannot be farmed. You are not displacing any alternative use of land, he said, especially if you are building in remote areas in Rajasthan, for example. Meanwhile, India continues to dig for coal to provide energy. It says it hopes to double production in 5 years. India says it needs such plants. It says one quarter of its 1.2 billion people still do not have electricity. Some Indian towns and cities still do not have reliable electricity for their people. Environmental activists warn that the use of the new coal-fueled power plants means that India will continue to increase the amount of carbon pollution it produces for many years. But environmental researcher Arunabha Ghosh notes that people don't seem to recognize that it is not a question of will more coal be built or not. It is a question of how many coal-fueled power centers are not going to be built because of these aggressive solar targets. We are going from about 8 to 13% of renewable energy in mid-century to 30% by 2030. China and the United States have set deadlines to reduce carbon they send into the air. But India has not. It has only set a goal of slowing the increase of pollution it creates, not reducing the total. Indian officials note that the amount of pollution the country creates is far lower compared with countries like the United States. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. Sprint has become the first United States-based telecommunications company to provide direct roaming mobile phone service to foreigners in Cuba. The deal was announced Monday in Havana, the Cuban capital. Sprint signed the deal with Cuba's state-operated telecommunications agency, Atexa. Roaming service is the ability of mobile phone users to operate their devices when away from home or outside their local calling area. Sprint wants to reach rising numbers of foreign tourists in Cuba. The company says it expects the number of visitors there to reach 5 million a year within the next 10 years. The deal comes as the United States and Cuba continue to explore possible business deals. The two countries re-established diplomatic relations in July for the first time in more than 54 years. Under the new agreement, Sprint's customers will now be able to generate and receive calls and text messages in Cuba from their personal mobile devices. Marcelo Claure is Sprint's president and chief executive officer. He considers the deal an important step for both countries.
This is a big deal because it shows that the U.S. and Cuba are working together in an area of progress, which is communications, and we expect this to be the beginning of a long-term business relationship between Sprint and between Atexa.
The agreement was announced at the Havana International Fair 2015. Reports say 900 businesses sent representatives to the fair. One-third of them were Cuban. About 70 countries, including the United States, took part in the event. Sprint is not the only U.S. company offering telecommunications services in Cuba. One of Sprint's main rivals is Verizon. That company announced in September that it would offer a roaming service to its clients visiting Cuba. However, that service is provided indirectly through a third party contracted by Atexa. Some business watchers are concerned that U.S. companies have fallen behind those of Cuba's strategic partners. Those countries include Cuba's traditional allies, such as China, Russia, and more recently Venezuela. Spain also has developed successful commercial relations with Cuba. The country had the largest foreign presence this year at the Havana International Fair. Of the 600 foreign companies taking part, 150 were from Spain. And that's the Economics Report. Visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com, for more stories and videos about economics, America, world issues, health, education, history, and entertainment. And keep listening every Monday, through Friday for our history program, The Making of a Nation. I'm Mario Ritter.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. By February 1st, 1861, 7 southern states had withdrawn from the United States of America. They created their own independent nation, the Confederate States of America. The South seceded because Abraham Lincoln, a Republican, had been elected president. Southerners believed he would support a constitutional ban on slavery. They were afraid their way of life would soon end. This week in our series, Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe discuss the beginning of Abraham Lincoln's presidency.
President-elect Lincoln traveled by train from his home in Illinois to Washington, D.C. Along the way, he stopped to make speeches. As he got closer to Washington, he was warned that a mob was planning to attack the train. He had to continue his trip in secret. Lincoln arrived in Washington 9 days before his inauguration. It was a busy time. He talked with many people, including delegates to a peace convention. Every state was represented at the convention, except the states that had seceded. The delegates urged Lincoln to support slavery. They urged him not to go to war over the issue. Lincoln said only that he would faithfully execute the duties of president of all the United States. He said he would protect and defend the American Constitution.
While Lincoln waited for Inauguration Day, he chose the members of his cabinet. He wanted men representing all opposing groups in the Republican Party. He hoped this would unite the party and give him support in the difficult years ahead. Lincoln chose William Seward as Secretary of State, Salmon Chase as Treasury Secretary, Gideon Welles as Navy Secretary, and Montgomery Blair as Postmaster General. Seward did not like Chase, Welles, or Blair. He told Lincoln that he could not serve in the cabinet with them. He said they would never be able to work together. Lincoln answered that he would be happy to make Seward ambassador to Britain instead of Secretary of State. Seward gave up the argument and agreed to join the cabinet.
Inauguration Day was the 4th of March. President-elect Lincoln rode to the ceremony with outgoing President James Buchanan. Buchanan was ready to give up his power. He told Lincoln, "If you are as happy to get into the White House as I am to get out of it, you must be the happiest man alive." The inaugural ceremony took place outside the Capitol building. Lincoln was to give his inaugural speech before being sworn in. He had worked hard on the speech. He wanted to say clearly what his policy would be on slavery and secession. These were the issues which divided the country. These were the issues which were leading the country to civil war. This is what Lincoln said.
"There seems to be some fear among the people of the southern states that because a Republican administration is coming to power, their property and their peace and personal security are threatened. There has never been any reasonable cause for such fears. In fact, much evidence to the contrary has existed, open to their inspection. It is found in nearly all my published speeches. In one of those speeches, I declared that I had no purpose, directly or indirectly, to interfere with the institution of slavery in the states where it exists. I said I believed I had no legal right to do so, and no wish to do so. This statement is still true. I can only say that the property, peace, and security of no part of the country are to be in any way endangered by the incoming administration.
Lincoln noted that 72 years had passed since the first president was inaugurated. Since then, he said, 15 men had led the nation through many dangers, generally with great success. He went on,
I now begin the same job under great difficulty. The breaking up of the Federal Union, before only threatened, now is attempted. I believe that under universal law and the Constitution, the union of these states is permanent. This is shown by the history of the Union itself. The Union is much older than the Constitution. It was formed, in fact, by the Articles of Association in 1774. It was continued by the Declaration of Independence in 1776. It grew further under the Articles of Confederation in 1778. And finally, in 1787, one of the declared reasons for establishing the Constitution of the United States was to form a more perfect union. I therefore believe that, in view of the Constitution and the laws, the Union is not broken. I shall make sure, as the Constitution orders me to do, that the laws of the Union are obeyed in all the states. In doing this, there needs to be no bloodshed or violence, and there shall be none unless it be forced upon the national government. The power given to me will be used to hold, occupy, and possess the property and places belonging to the government, and to collect the taxes. But beyond what is necessary for these purposes, there will be no invasion, no using of force against or among the people anywhere.
Lincoln then repeated some statements he had made during his campaign for president. He used them to explain the differences between North and South. One part of the country, he said, believes slavery is right and should be extended. The other part believes slavery is wrong and should not be extended. This, he said, was the only important dispute. Lincoln admitted that even if the dispute could be settled peacefully, there were those who wanted to see the Union destroyed. He said his words were not meant for them. They were meant only for those people who really loved the Union. He said,
physically speaking, we cannot separate. We cannot remove our sections from each other, nor build an impassable wall between them. A husband and wife may be divorced and go away from or out of the reach of each other. But the different parts of our country cannot do this. They must remain face to face, and relations, friendly or hostile, must continue between them. Is it possible to make those relations better after separation than before? Can aliens make treaties easier than friends can make laws? Can treaties be more faithfully enforced between aliens than laws can be enforced among friends? My countrymen, one and all, think calmly and well upon this subject. Nothing valuable can be lost by taking time. In your hands, my dissatisfied fellow countrymen, and not in mine, is the great issue of civil war. The government will not attack you. You can have no conflict without being yourselves the aggressors. We are not enemies, but friends. We must not be enemies. Though emotion may have damaged them, it must not break our ties of love.
Abraham Lincoln then placed his hand on the Christian holy book, the Bible. The Chief Justice of the United States then spoke the presidential oath. Lincoln repeated the words, and the United States had a new president. Lincoln's first crisis came quickly. It was a problem left unsolved by the outgoing president. Lincoln had to decide immediately what to do about the federal fort in the harbor of Charleston, South Carolina, Fort Sumter. The fort was surrounded by Southern artillery. Southern gunboats guarded the harbor. The federal troops inside Fort Sumter were getting dangerously low on food. But any attempt to send more men or supplies would be seen as an act of war, civil war. That will be our story next week.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe. Transcripts, MP3s, and podcasts of our programs are online, along with historical images, at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us at twitter.com/voalearnenglish. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.